The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back. Wednesday, March 13th, 2024. I am Seth Leibson. Our phone number is 602-508-0960. Young David, good to see you. Miss Terry, good to see you. Mr. Bill is here. You going dancing tonight, David? Or
no.
We've arrested the Wednesday night dancing, ballroom dancing.
If you must know, the Wednesday night ballroom dancing was kicked out. They were the ones who were arrested. I don't know if that's the right word.
Too much loudness? Too much revelry?
The place they were using, the venue, kicked them out. And they were just, it wasn't of ill will.
Well, what happened to dancing in the streets then? You can do that. You can have a fiesta.
We don't
have
the Shondells, and we don't have Mick Jagger, and we don't have Van Halen around to help
us
out with that.
Yes. I mean, what about Lionel Richie? Make it a party. Make it a charivari. Do you know what a charivari is? You may want to look that up.
No.
Well, welcome back. 602-508-0960. The House of Representatives did vote to send over to the Senate the authorization to put an end to TikTok as we know it in America. Good. Good. Interesting that Chuck Schumer has not weighed in on his position on this. Interesting that there were some Republicans who did not vote, many of whom were making the argument that this was a First Amendment issue. As far as I'm concerned, nothing could be further from the truth. Brendan Carr, a Republican member of the FCC, put it this way. TikTok's claim that the First Amendment somehow prevents Congress from requiring TikTok to divest its ties to the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, is incorrect. The law is very clear on this. Specifically, the Supreme Court has long drawn a distinction between laws based on the content of speech and those based on conduct instead. Laws that fall into the first category, that is to say, restricting the content of speech, almost always violate the First Amendment. But those that fall into the second category, laws based on conduct, by regulating non-expressive conduct, do not violate the First Amendment. Here, the bill that Congress passed today, or the House of Representatives passed today, the bill is not based on the content of TikTok's protected speech or on any of the lawful content that TikTok users want to share or receive. Instead, the bill takes action based on TikTok's illegal conduct, namely the concrete threat to national security that TikTok poses as evidenced by its pattern of illicit actions, conduct that is not protected by the First Amendment. The Supreme Court's decision in Arcara v. Cloud, 1986, I think, offers an analogous case in point. We were discussing this the other day. The government shut down a bookstore because the owner used the facility to engage in illegal conduct. The owner argued that, notwithstanding the illegal conduct, the government could not close the store because the First Amendment protected the selling and purchasing of books. While the court recognized that the closing of the store would have an incidental burden on that protected speech, it upheld the closure because the government acted based on the owner's unlawful conduct, not based on the conduct of any speech, not based on what was written or printed in those books. Same here. The First Amendment does not protect espionage. Otherwise, you would not have people indicted for violations of the Espionage Act. And the Constitution does not require the government to allow TikTok's national security threat to persist simply because TikTok also enables Americans to use the platform for protected speech. The bill at issue presents an even easier case from a First Amendment perspective because, contrary to TikTok's claim, the bill would enable Americans to keep using it, provided that it generally excuse me, that it genuinely cuts ties with the CCP. So they have a choice. Sell it to an American company that falls under American jurisdiction and regulation, or it will be shut down. The arguments are kind of interesting when you see some libertarian-type conservatives refuting that argument that we just made. So, for example, I have seen, and I, you know, do people sometimes say, do you ever disagree with Donald Trump? You bet. Have you had disagreements with things he said? You bet. I've issued many of those. This is one of them. He said, as Elon Musk has said, that Facebook, for example, would be the beneficiary because it would have, you know, less competition. And Facebook is a genuinely liberal left algorithm-based product. I want us to be very clear about something here. I have scored Joe Biden for referring to Hamas from the White House as our opponents. That's the phrase he used, our opponents. When he speaks about Republicans in America, he calls them threats to democracy. He calls them extremists. He uses harsher language on American Republicans than he does Hamas. That is a categorical error. It is an error that, frankly, offends and violates the notion of categories. So too here. Yes, we can understand that Facebook is a liberal left outlet fueled by and funded by liberal left interests. And there are things we perhaps could do about that. We've talked about perhaps using an overhaul, perhaps implementing an overhaul of the various federal communications laws of the 1930s that have built-in protections for social media companies that they've exploited. And that's certainly a route to go. But the idea that liberal left American Facebook is of equal or greater threat than communist China Marxist Maoism is an offense to the category. It's just wrong. Vivek Ramaswamy wrote, "The most egregious case of social media censorship and an online persuasion effort that protected the CCP was the widespread silencing of anyone who said COVID started in a Chinese lab. It's worth remembering which companies actually did it: Google, Facebook, and pre-Elon Musk Twitter." He's not wrong that that was all egregious. It also came from pressure from the government. The point of it is this: we had an American solution to that through the political system and the American legal system, which was asleep at the wheel because of the political choices this country had made. It's not the same thing because we have it within our reach with better political decisions and experience to deal with those kinds of companies and those kinds of egregious violations of our, shall we say, consumer practices. Not so with an enemy country. I was talking to a friend of mine this morning who knows as much about China as anyone I know, and where he stood on this. I thought I knew. He stood with the majority of the House of Representatives. And I said to him, can we think of other examples where Congress has had to pass laws like this against any given company? Outside of the economic realm, gosh knows we've slapped and presidents have slapped economic punishments, tariffs, things like that on foreign countries. But this isn't that, is it? And he said, well, the reason no immediate analogs come to mind is we've really never before allowed a foreign enemy country to engage in the marketplace of espionage in this country. In other words, this is virgin territory that those who are crying First Amendment or screaming First Amendment don't understand precisely what they are allowing the First Amendment to be used and abused for. This very new virgin territory moment where a Marxist, Leninist, Maoist country is engaging not only in the warping minds of our youth, but espionage on America. And at the end of the day, Robert Jackson, Supreme Court Justice Robert Jackson, was right. If you remember nothing else from anything the Supreme Court has ever written, remember this. The Constitution is not a suicide pact. I'm Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, coming to you live from the 960 Patriot Broadcast Studio, which is brought to you in part by the veteran-owned Midas Gold Group, your trusted source for precious metals. Two data points, one, maybe both, you are unaware of. Mr. Bill, you may want to come in for this. First off, I was reminded that 4 years ago today, the coronavirus COVID was announced as a national emergency. I just saw a study come across my transom just out from the Journal of the American Medical Association. Do you know how many cancer cases went undiagnosed in 2020?
Big percentage of them.
134,395. Wow. So I thought it would be fun or interesting or sad or embarrassing, any number of those things, and maybe an amalgam of them all, to look at what my monologue was that day.
Oh, good one.
Revisit what our thinking was, because you were part and parcel of this with me. This was pre-Young David. This was when Young David was even younger.
He sure was.
We were all so much older then. We're younger than
I want to take offense to this statement, but it's factual.
There's nothing to be offended by.
We were younger too, so for what that's worth.
Well, we were all so much older then. We're younger than that now. My back pages, Bob
yes.
Dylan.
Here's Steve what I will said. Love that.
Huh?
Steve will love that.
I wrote, "We find ourselves at the end of a week of deeply anxious causing news. You bet we've been worrying about the China virus for a few weeks now." That's what we called it.
Never change.
But this this is interesting. What I wrote, it's really, some of it was really off. But this week, things ramped up. I don't know what next week will bring. We are told over and over we will get worse numbers as more and more people are being tested. And of course, already our cable channels are running the daily and hourly tolls, minus the one thing we keep asking for. The numbers of those who have had the virus and recovered. Never got that, did we? I can't tell. Well, later we did. I can't tell that if that is due to an effort to create consternation or if it is due to an effort to have us not underestimate the direness of the situation and encourage complacency. But if we all think we are operating in a realm of not enough information, let's have it all and allow us to be mature enough to assimilate the information as best we can and choose, minus government emergency edicts. To that end, as of right now, there are 17,000 cases. Could they get worse? Sure. Could they top out or level out? Look, all is unknown. So, of course, the most caution is the best advice I can give and accept. I presume, after all, this is an embarrassing one. You ready? Here comes an embarrassment. I presume, after all, that the doctors know more than I, and that we should listen to our doctors. And right now, our national doctors are Jerome Adams, Deborah Birx, and Anthony Fauci. I mentioned this too yesterday, and I've been asked to mention it again. It's from Dr. John Ioannidis, professor of medicine, of epidemiology and public health, of biomedical data science, and of statistics at Stanford University. He writes, "The data collected so far on how many people are infected and how the epidemic is evolving are utterly unreliable. Given the limited testing to date, some deaths and probably the vast majority of infections due to SARS-CoV-2 are being missed. We don't know if we are failing to capture infections by a factor of 3 or 300. 3 months after the outbreak emerged, most countries, including the U.S., lack the ability to test a large number of people, and no countries have reliable data on the prevalence of the virus in a representative random sample of the general population. The one situation," still quoting him, "where an entire closed population was tested," do you remember this? We're going down memory lane here. "The one situation was the Diamond Princess cruise ship.
and its quarantined passengers. The case fatality rate there was 1.0%, but this was a largely elderly population in which the death rate from COVID-19 is much higher. You may ask, what did the CFR end up actually being? That, 1.0. Ioannidis was much farther ahead of the game than what Burks and Adams and that whole crowd were telling us. Anyway, he goes on to write, projecting the Diamond Princess mortality rate onto the age structure of the U.S., the death rate among people infected with COVID-19 would be 0.125%, but since this estimate is based on extremely thin data, there were just seven deaths among the 700 infected passengers and crew, the real death rate could stretch from five times lower to five times higher. It is also possible that some of the passengers who were infected might die later and that tourists may have different frequencies of chronic diseases than the general population. Adding these extra sources of uncertainty, reasonable estimates for the fatality ratio in the general U.S. population range from 0.05 to 1. That's the close of quote there. This is rational, and it sounds right, I said. It could also be wrong, and the professor who admits, and deaths could also increase based on how we handle this from other events and diseases due to lack of resources. So let's be operational pessimists and theoretical optimists, I say. But that does get us to the economy, doesn't it? I don't really like saying we have to worry about the economy because it sounds cold. It shouldn't. The root of the word economy is from Greek, oikonomia, which means household management. And whenever I think or talk of the economy, that is what I think of, families and households, communities. The reason I am an economic conservative is because of this very view. I then went on to quote Barry Goldwater from his book Conscience of a Conservative, where he says, conservatism is not an economic theory, though it has economic implications. The shoe is on the other foot. It is socialism that subordinates all other considerations to man's material well-being. It is conservatism that puts material things in their proper place, that has a structured view of the human being and of human society in which economics plays only a subsidiary role. And I think that's interesting when you think about who was for shutting down the economy and who was for keeping it open, right? Right? It's kind of interesting. The root difference between the conservatives and liberals of today is that conservatives take into account the whole man, while the liberals tend to only look at the material side of man's nature. That we saw play out in part of it too, didn't we? The conservative believes that man is in part economic and animal, but that he is also spiritual with spiritual needs and spiritual desires. What is more, these needs and desires reflect the superior side of man's nature and thus take precedence over his economic wants. Conservatism, therefore, looks upon the enhancement of man's spiritual nature as the primary concern of political philosophy. And then I went to Adam Smith. The property which every man has in his own labor, as it is the original foundation of all other property, is the most sacred and inviolable of all holdings. The patrimony of a poor man lies in the strength and dexterity of his hands, and to hinder him from employing this strength and dexterity in what manner he thinks proper, without injury to his neighbor, is a plain violation of this most sacred property. It is a manifest encroachment upon the just liberty both of the workman and of those who might be disposed to employ him. I'll say a little bit more about what I said about the China virus on the day of its anniversary of it being held a national emergency. We'll do a culture and economy update, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. John Dombrowski brings us our culture and economy segment. He is the founder and president of Grand Canyon Planning Associates, grandcanyonplanning.com, his website. Great place to see what his organization might be able to do for you, and a great place, grandcanyonplanning.com, to reach out to him. John, how are you today, sir?
Fantastic. Thank you, Seth.
EV euphoria is dead.
Yeah. A sentence
that would make no sense 15 years ago, but that is the headline at CNBC. I'm fascinated by these things.
Yeah, we wouldn't have even known what EV meant.
I don't know if we would have known.
This is a little culture and economy in one, isn't it?
I don't even know.
Electric vehicles don't seem to be all that the country wanted them to be, or I should say that the government wanted them to be, or wanted to force down, you know, the consumer's throats here. What was really interesting, and what I think is said about this whole aspect of this, I'm not saying that they're dead. You know, the euphoria is dead, but electric vehicles are probably here and they're here to stay.
Oh, I agree with you. Yeah.
But what we are finding is that it's certainly not going to be the mandated, you know, plan of, you know, eliminating all of the gasoline engine vehicles by 2035 or whatever it was supposed to be. That's not going to happen, as we know. But what's really, I think, what I take away from this is that I feel horrible for the automakers who manufactured the gasoline engine vehicles, who were kind of forced into a position to take on the change of their industry and go to EV. At their own detriment, right? Mm-hmm. Because the government was forcing this and mandating that this is what was going to happen. But the consumer is ultimately who controls what's happening out there and what's going to sell and not sell. And fortunately, I think for this country, we're starting to see that, hey, we can't go all in on EVs at such a quick pace. And I think that most likely, Seth, even over the next 5, 10, 15 years, the battery-operated electric vehicles, there might be some other alternative energy that we're going to find maybe better because, as we all know, trying to eliminate the batteries, you know, get rid of the batteries and some of the other materials that are used in these vehicles, that is harmful to the environment as well.
You know, it's interesting. You're right. I mean, it's – I have said this for a long time, and I think you would agree with me that – but don't feel that you have to. Americans kind of love their cars. Mm-hmm. There's a sense of freedom. There's inherent in the car. There's a sense of depending on whether you like speed or luxury or comfort or economy, any number of things. Americans just like them. I mean, there was a huge, obviously, you remember the campaign of apple pie and Chevrolet, right? Mm-hmm. Tying the whole American ethos to the car. And if you think about the trajectory of the automobile as we knew it from Henry Ford, what, like 1908 to 5 years ago, the combustion engine car,
right?
That took a long time to get us to where, you know, we wanted what we got. And they forced this EV thing on us so damn quickly. And it was a lurch that I think was not just economic, but cultural.
Yeah, and what I think what you said is true, right? You know, people love their cars.
Yeah.
But we also, as Americans, love choice.
Yes.
And we want the freedom of choice.
Yeah.
We don't like to be told what to do, and especially by the government. Now, if it's your, you know, you're a child growing up, your parents tell you what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, part of life. Or your boss tells you, hey, you've got to do this or that. But when it comes to the freedoms that we do have of choice, maybe in spending our own money and how we want to spend it.
Yeah.
That was difficult for a lot of people to swallow, plus of the cost. Now here I am talking about this. I do own an electric vehicle, but I also own gas vehicles as well.
Yeah.
So I'm not opposed.
Same with Adam Carolla. Keep going. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
I'm not opposed to, you know, these options available, but I did it under my own you know, my own decision I made to be able to buy an electric vehicle. I wasn't mandated to buy it. And if I was, I would have probably pushed back a little bit on that.
Yeah, of course you would have. You have a hybrid household. Now, I know a lot of households that are hybrid that way in the sense of they have an electric and a regular.
Right.
Anyway, interesting.
Yeah,
Thank you,
it is.
John.
Now, we didn't talk about the stock and you know, Tesla and all the other companies that are having some potential problems, but Tesla's still surviving, and it's going to. We could certainly talk about that next time.
Let's do, please.
Okay. Securities and Advisory Services offered through Creative One Securities LLC, a member of FINRA SIPC, and an investment advisor, Grand Canyon Planning Associates LLC, and Creative One Securities LLC are not affiliated. Go to our website, grandcanyonplanning.com.
Apple pie. Thanks, and Chevrolet.
Bye-bye.
Well, welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I am delighted to bring on air, not for the first time, but first time in a long time, one of my favorite people in the wide world of sports, Scott Ryan. Scott Ryan, among other things, is the president of the Ahwatukee Kiwanis Club, or the Kiwanis Club of Ahwatukee, which is the sponsor of one of the great American things, almost as American or maybe even more American than baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet. Scott Ryan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and thank you for the wonderful intro music of Gordon Lightfoot. You can never go wrong right there.
Well, maybe you can. That is the most dolorous, sad of his songs that is more, you know, down than up. But we do like Gordon Lightfoot generally. I interviewed him once. Did you know that? You probably didn't.
I did not know that, and we're going to totally go sideways on here on Gordon Lightfoot songs, because I think that's one of his more uplifting ones.
You do?
Not the one about, I think, you know, all of his, he has many songs that I feel are about, like, drinking in the dark, thinking about all the women that you've wandered in your life, right?
Yeah.
And which is a depressing thought, too.
Yeah. You know, Carefree Highway is about the Carefree Highway here in Arizona. Did you know that, his song, Carefree Highway?
I always suspected, but I have a tendency to always associate things, even if they're not from there. I will just say, oh, yeah, it's about the Carefree Highway.
Well, it is, and it was about, you know, the girl he mentions in there. And it's all of his lyrics are kind of interesting. Some of them don't make any sense. Like, if you could read my mind... It makes no sense. That was the cause of my interview. I tried to interview him to discern what he meant, and that was the goes back. We lost him recently. We lost some great musicians recently.
Yeah, he's one of those ones I've always wished I had a chance to see live.
I know. Who's the one your most favorite that you saw live that you will have bragging rights for?
Let's see here. I've seen a lot of terrible shows. I like to go to the tribute bands and relive my youth.
Yeah.
But let's see, what is a good show?
Do you remember, you and I went to the Ostrich Festival. Do you remember who was playing when you took us there?
It was Three Dog Night.
Yes, Three Dog Night. Well done, Scott Ryan. That was over 10 years ago.
Holy cow.
I know.
Time has flown, my friend.
I know. Well, let's talk about another great event, the Ahwatukee Easter Parade. It happens March
40th annual. Oh, Ahwatukee Easter Parade.
How many 48. Years? 48th. Wow. 48.
Yes. We actually even kept it going during COVID.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. I think I've been to a bunch of them. Almost all of them since I moved here. Tell the audience what they get, what it's all about.
So it is the Ahwatukee Easter Parade, and it is the only Easter parade in the greater Phoenix area. Starts at 10 o'clock on March 30th, which is a Saturday, not to get confused. It is free throughout the day. The parade starts actually on 48th and Warner, goes 1 mile up to 48th and Elliott. It takes about 60, 90 minutes for the entire parade to pass you by. It's easy to get in, easy to get out. It's free throughout the day. It's just, you know, honestly, it's my favorite community event and we also have a spring fling immediate after the parade where we have vendors, food courts, your arts and crafts festival. And we have plenty of politicians walking through getting signatures and such. And what I always tell people, if you want to meet your local elected representatives or anybody who is running for office, this is a great community event because you will have It's probably a lot of times it's the sun is out. It's the first community in Ahwatukee where everybody's going to be out trying to talk to voters, probably for the first time. So you can get some pretty raw. It's always good to talk to the first time campaigners because they're still getting their ebbs and flow of how it works. But it's just a great community.
It is a lot of fun. Yeah, you see a lot of campaigners, a lot of people running for elected office, statewide, local, you name it, the whole panoply. I think a bunch of guests on this show who are running for office will be there. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I believe that Dr. Jasser.
Jasser Zudi will be there. Yeah, Zudi Jasser.
Will be there.
Yeah.
I've heard Carrie Lake will be there.
Probably, yeah.
We also have their opponents going to be there. Sure. My goal is I'm going to try and get a picture with all of them.
Yeah, you are? Okay. All right. Bury the lead. Who are the MCs for this parade?
The MC is – so traditionally my wife and I have been at one of the MCs along the route. This year we have a very, very special guest who's filling in for me, and that special guest is Seth Leitzen.
I and the lovely Vanessa will be – now, filling in for you only as the MC. Let's not get weird about this.
Yeah, it's just a fun event, you know, we are at our station and, you know, we do what we want at our station. There could be some chicken dancing. There could be some hokey pokey. We might get a little dangerous later on.
I think when you were doing it one year or when she was, I think I brought my,
I think I brought my axe and played a little trumpet.
Did. Yes, you did bring the trumpet. I remember that.
Yeah.
And I remember a friend of mine said, oh, yeah, I saw Seth. Saw your friend Seth walking by. He was carrying a trumpet.
Say a word about Kiwanis. What a great group. You're the president of the Ahwatukee chapter.
Yeah, and not to gloss over. I mean, it is a community event, but this is our largest fundraiser for the year.
Yep.
And what this does is it allows us to do the mission of the Kiwanis is all about foster youth and improving the lives of children around the world, right? Mm-hmm. And but basically what we get from this, from people showing up from sponsoring, which we are still looking for. We do not have a grant sponsor this year,
okay. But
you know, those kind of things that do help us with. One of the things is we do a community baby shower where we provide for younger teens that are themselves in foster care,
yeah.
Which is a terrible situation.
Yeah.
They seem to be parents themselves. We try to give them the resources because they're going to be parents. That mm-hmm. ship has sailed, right?
Yeah.
So we try to do the best to help them in that situation. We also do a foster care Christmas and Thanksgiving. We're just kind of my one little club where I have breakfast with everybody. Like there's five or six of us every Thursday. You know, we were able to give 13% of the foster kids in the greater Phoenix Valley a Christmas experience,
wow,
right? And that was just our one club with the help of other clubs. But, you know, that is what, like, if you want to show up, you want to see what we're about, that's the kind of thing that just showing up will help, right?
That is your motto, right? You serve the children of the world or something like that. Am I wrong?
We is. And I'm the worst because at some of the clubs, they do that pledge every – and I always, like, mumble it. Right, like the guy who forgot the words to the national anthem. But yeah, no, it is to greater serve the children of the world.
Well, Scott, I am so looking forward to it. It'll be good to hook up with you guys. Who doesn't love a parade? I'm sure the weather will be wonderful. It's March 30th. It's in Ahwatukee, folks. You know, and it's for a good cause, and you'll get to see a lot of people that you know and a lot of people you will want to know. And it's just a lot of fun, and I'm honored to be an MC along with the lovely Vanessa. Thank you, Scott. You'll be there, too, of course, because you're managing
the whole thing. Of course, yeah. And hey, you know what? Thank you for letting me talk about it.
You bet.
I appreciate the time, brother.
Appreciate you, Scott Ryan, and the Kiwanis Club, and we'll see you soon. See you March 30th. Thank you. Be good.
Thank you.
Portions of the show brought to you by our good friends at Y Refi. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com, or give them a call at 888-YREFI24. Or if you want to proverbially kick their tires, they invite anyone to stop in. They're headquartered right here in Phoenix. They're on Chauncey Lane in North Phoenix. If you do go by, you won't get a sales pitch. You won't be asked to sign a thing. But with YRefi, what you can get is a fixed rate of return on a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio up to 10.25%. That's up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, and it's not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. There are absolutely no fees with YRefi. There is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. Of course, you get a monthly statement with no surprises, and you can turn your income on or off. Compound it whatever you like. Check them out at investyrefi.com. This is kind of, I don't know, this is interesting with Joe Biden after his State of the Union talking about how great the economy is doing. The Wall Street Journal has a piece of that identifies costs of many basic products and what they cost in 2020 as an average price to what they cost now. So, for example, baby wipes in 2020 were $4.25. They're $6.64 now. Bleach was $2.78. It's now $4.87. Cooking oil went from $5.22 to $8.04. Deodorant went from $4.68 to $7.43. Dog food, I guess it would be a can probably, went from $5.42 to $8.48. Eggs went from $2.35 to $3.87. Nutrition bars, $3.12 to $5.67. Paper towels went up from $5.76 to $8.22. Ramen, interesting. Ramen went from $62 to $108. Now, here's the one that's really interesting to me, young David. This is the most interesting of all. They list cow's milk, which went from $2.70 to $3.26. Cow's milk. Is that a sign of the times? Wouldn't it be a better country if it just said milk?
I don't think people would see milk and say, I wonder if they're talking about almond or goat. Cow's milk. That's the only milk there really should be when we talk about basics. No? I just hate what we're doing with our language. Hate it. All right, we'll be right back.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.